Welcome to the FemTech Health Podcast. Today, we're joined by Robert Greer, founder of ARMS Medical, who is pioneering change in women's health and the pelvic organ prolapse and stress urinary incontinence space. We're going to dive into all things related to innovative solutions for women's health, including regenerative medicine, pelvic organ prolapse, and stress urinary incontinence. You're going to learn about the latest advancements in regenerative medicine, the impact of innovative technologies on women's quality of life, and the importance of collaboration in the healthcare industry. All right, let's get started with today's show.
I'm here today with Robert Greer, founder of ARMS Medical. He is pioneering change for women's health and the pelvic organ prolapse and stress urinary incontinence space. He wants women to regain their confidence and their spontaneity. His work with DermaPure, VNew, and D-Cell technology sparked my interest. Robert, thanks for being on the show today. I'm really excited to have you. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in this space.
Well, thanks for having me. It's kind of fun. I'm on the other side. So, you know, a little nervous of the fact that usually I'm asking the questions. You know, so like, oh, I gotta prepare for some of these things here. So it's great to be on your program. You've done some fantastic work and I've had an opportunity to follow you for some time. And so love what you're doing. And thanks for peeking into our world on the surgery side of things. So we stand from the area of where someone says, hey, I've got prolapse. And then now I'm gonna go have surgery. And so you'd asked about how did I get into this? Right. Yeah. I think part of the fact of I've got a mom, I've got two older sisters, and there's also when I started on the medical side after the military with Pfizer, I got to be a part of how just innovation in medicine helped so many people. And then I was actually asked and brought into the space of pelvic floor with a colleague of mine that had worked at Pfizer and said, hey, come help me out. And, you know, started from managing the East Coast to then managing the country and then founding my own company after that.
Well, congratulations. I'm glad you're in this space. It's really a growing industry right now, pelvic health, as you well know. And, you know, pelvic organ prolapse is a $4.5 billion industry, and it's amazing, and it's expected to grow even more just because, you know, there's so many injuries that can happen due to birth trauma and, you know, menopause, et cetera. And we're, of course, trying to be on the proactive prevention side of it. But then if people do have these things, we need innovations like you're talking about. So it's kind of exciting to hear this other side of it, because so much of the time we maybe hear negative components. And I feel like the things that you're working on are such positive components for us as we look at surgical interventions. So tell me a little bit, you know, as you move through this, you know, how did you sort of think, oh, this is really a specific thing? I mean, I hear you talking about your mom and your sisters, but like pelvic health is, you know, just really taken up, you know, this last maybe 5-10 years, we're realizing how important it is. So, you know, how long maybe have you been in this space of pelvic health?
Yeah, so I've been in the space for 15 years. I started on the mesh side of the solution, and I was witness to the efficacy of mesh, but then at the same time, what can happen when it goes wrong? And it can be extremely debilitating for these ladies. It can be life-changing. It can, you know, separate relationships. Women, you know, can lose their job because of mesh complications. You know, they have, you know, multiple years of trying to get things rectified. And in fact, I was with a surgeon here last week where this young 80-year-old lady was on her fifth surgery to you know, rectify a mesh complication, and hopefully this will be the last one for her. And so I guess my passion was always to be innovative. And I think that stems from my background in engineering and the fact that the space of women's health is so underserved, and you know that the opportunity is there for people that want to work hard and want to, you know, offer a different solution for women in such a an unmet, underserved population.
I know. I think this is the, you know, movement now really in the whole women's health world, right? Is like just giving people back their quality of life, you know, their sexual health, their ability to work at a job, their ability to actually be present for their family system. And so I think that's why innovative technology and us thinking outside the box, you know, think mesh was around forever and people just did it and just thought, oh, this is what we have to do. And now I think there's so many more options. So tell us about some of the things you're working on right now and maybe some of the outcomes you're seeing, et cetera.
Sure. Well, you know, if you think about just, you know, how things have transitioned, you know, at 50, you know, people that were 50 years old were told to just live with this condition. This is a part of being a woman. This is a part of, you know, having children. You know, these are the things that happen. And for the longest time, you know, we had a couple of options. You know, you've got your classic pessary, right? And then you also have the, you know, that you can go to Costco and you can see, you know, aisles and aisles and aisles of Depends. And, you know, for women, primarily, you know, adult women, because it affects so many women, nearly one in two after the age of 50. And fact is that we want to be able to offer solutions that are not only effective, but also safe. And so everything that we do, everything that we bring to market has a focus on being regenerative in nature, being as natural as possible. And that's really the things that are important to us as a company, is that we're trying to help these ladies, but at the end of the day, we never want to hurt them by our solution. And so some of those things that you had mentioned earlier, we've got, you know, a few different products, you know, to treat pelvic organ prolapse, depending on what their condition is. So we've got, you know, different pre-cut shapes that these young ladies can utilize, depending on the condition that they have. The surgeon will actually then pick the shape that would best match their condition. And then we also have a fasciolata sling, where someone wants to avoid mesh in, you know, where they don't want to have any mesh, because mesh is still being utilized for treating stress urinary incontinence. So, you know, not all women are good candidates for that. And so some of those women that, you know, might want to consider, you know, using something that's like fasciolata could be either A, a woman who doesn't want to have mesh, or B, it could be a woman that is post-cancer, so they're really high risk for any type of mesh, and or they just have some different comorbidities that would exclude her from being a good candidate for your traditional mesh length.
So, Robert, I'm just going to clarify, because a lot of our audience is, you know, pelvic PTs. And I just want to say, like, when we look at pelvic organ prolapse, usually, you know, we see this uptick after 5 years if they've had multiple babies, that they're at more risk or greater risk for pelvic organ prolapses. Up to that 20-year mark is where a lot of the data runs. So, you know, in that first 5 years, of course, we as pelvic PTs are trying to intervene, right? So that we stabilize the floor, help, you know, neuromuscular support, you know, make sure endopelvic fascia is still intact, make sure abdominal core is strong, et cetera. So we kind of consider ourselves, you know, that first line of defense. I just want to clarify to them that we're not jumping to surgical procedures, but we know that if we don't get progressions the way we should, right, and pessaries aren't working, or maybe there's too many side effects of pessaries, et cetera, that then we are looking for really good surgical options. I just had a woman who had 6 babies, 5 vaginal deliveries, a C-section with last babies. And so, you know, the crazy part of it is that then, you know, we worked really hard for a whole year with her. And then we were like, nope, it's time. You know, you've done all the steps. I mean, the pessary wasn't standing in, you know, we just weren't getting where we need to go. You know, she's got six kids. She's a woman on her feet. She's a woman on the move. She's got to have a surgical intervention. And I guess that's really why when I saw all of your work, I was just like, okay, this is really important because people need to understand that people are doing surgical procedures with different products and different things, and they need to understand how to ask for these things and how to know who is their surgeon and what are they using. And probably because I've been in the space so long, I've just seen too many women with so many mesh issues that, you know, I ended up having women with migrating mesh and then the floor is destroyed and they're not having sex for 20 years because they're absolutely miserable and they can't tolerate this. And like you said before, destroying relationships, et cetera, because people don't have the quality of life. So I guess that's why I want to really know, do you feel like these new products are really changing? Do you know what I mean? The outcomes and that women's quality of life is so much better because they don't have migration of mesh and all the irritation from mesh.
Yeah, I mean, so first and foremost, for the PTs that are out there, it definitely is not enough of them. You know, I mean, the ones that we have relationships with, that we work with, you know, they're you know, so busy. And at the same time, you've got to get those physicians involved. You got to bring more awareness to women, you know, after they've had a child, like how to get that pelvic floor back in shape again. And so, you know, the work that you guys are doing is absolutely critical and fantastic. And you know, that's why we love that relationship, because we're really the last, you know, part of it. If it gets that far, if it doesn't, fantastic. But we know it does. It just, you know, depending on people's bodies and how things stretch. You know, I always think of the pelvic floor as a spring, and so you know you can keep bringing that spring back and forth. But you know, so many times though, it just goes too much, and then you've actually stretched it out beyond the fact that you can bring it back to its original state. And so that's kind of like the person that you were talking about, which is the one who had multiple childbirth. And so when you say, you know, how is this, what's the impact that it's had? So it's been on the market since 2016, probably like a half a year, but really I would say 2017 is really the first year that it was put into the hands of experts around the country. And from there, it grew every single year. And so at this point, as we're sitting here today, we've been very fortunate to have helped over 7,000 women have a better solution that is not only has great efficacy, but also safe for these ladies. And so that's one thing that we're proud of, is that, you know, all this hard work and my dedicated team that's out there working with the surgeons across the country is so passionate about having innovation for them. And, you know, we love working with the innovative surgeons. So, you know, these things go hand in hand, back and forth, from things that we can bring to market and really listening to the surgeons, listening to the patients and saying, you know, what's not being addressed? How can we do it better? And always pushing ourselves forward.
So right now it sounds more like, you know, you're sort of looking at the anterior vault or the apical part of the vaginal vault and doing more work there. Does some of this work in the, you know, with rectocele, so the posterior part of the floor as well?
It does. Yep.
Totally.
And so we do have combinations. We do work with the colorectal surgeons also, because they're part of that component of getting women healthy. And so our products are utilized in addressing the rectal prolapse of sorts, along with, you know, dealing with posterior compartment, bottom of the vagina, that we have implants that can help them strengthen and provide better tissue, better outcomes for those ladies also.
That's awesome. So when you're talking about, you know, like the Venu and then, you know, it's all pre-cut. And so like a physician, you know, how, you know, maybe you have new physicians who want to come on with you, but do you guys train them with it? You teach them, like, how does this all come about that they learn to new, you know, learn, you know, to utilize these new things?
Well, most of them are already doing this particular procedure, which would be, you know, anterior repair, posterior repair, or apical prolapse. So they're already in the space. We really try to partner with the best surgeons because we want to put the best products in the hands with the best surgeons to give these women the best outcomes. And so we're actually very selective with who we work with because we don't want to, you know, it's not that we don't want to work with people that, you know, aren't doing these high volume, but it's at the end of the day, it's about the woman and it's about her outcomes. And so for us as a company and looking at how women want to certainly get the best possible chance of having, you know, top-notch outcomes, we want to work with the best surgeons in the country. And we've been very fortunate to do so. And so many times it might be some one-on-one training with one of our key opinion leaders. So we do those type of trainings for them. I certainly fly around the country to be able to work with the surgeons in the operating room. You know, that's where we learn so much. That's where innovation happens is in the operating room. And then we've got, you know, other resources that are available if we are doing some cadaveric courses, you know, with like, say, the younger surgeons, so that then we have that they can get that hands-on training working with them, you know, but we always want to ensure that by the time it gets to the operating room and gets into the patient, it is with a well-trained surgeon who has hundreds and hundreds of these, understands the space, understands the anatomy, and then wants to reinforce what their current technique is with the Venu.
So does the Venu have the D cell? Can you tell us about the D cell a little bit?
Sure. You know, what got me interested in the space itself of regenerative medicine is that, you know, mesh had efficacy but complications, and technology that other companies were currently using were what I would consider to be outdated and antiquated. And so, you know, if I kind of joke because I have this phone, this phone here, this is like 1969. That's some of the technology that's out there. When my daughter tried to dial it, this is when she was younger. It was pretty funny because, you know, they only had the smartphones, right? And she's like, oh, like, this is the silliest thing ever. I go, yeah, well, there you go. That's what you had in 1969. So, you know, these bigger companies out there had outdated technology. And so, you know, what interested me in this D cell is that it started in heart valves. And so in the heart valve space, that's one area that, you don't have to be a doctor to know you don't want that to fail, right? You know, so when you're replacing a heart valve, we really want it to work. And so the University of Leeds in the UK did a joint venture with the country of Brazil, and they developed this very extensive process of removing the DNA and keeping what we want is the vascular channels, proteins, collagens, all this supporting material, A, because that gets it to be rejected, to then be able to have that now become part of the person that it's implanted with. And so they took this then technology and they put it into the tissue that we have today, which is the Venu. And so what that does and what that does for the woman and for the surgeon is that they know that they're going to have something that's not going to be rejected. They are going to get the best environment for their tissue to heal. They're also going to have the ability to, you know, produce better tissue that can, in the long run, give a more efficacious outcome. So having access to this type of technology is really critical. And so that's what we're fortunate enough to be able to have this for all the women here in the United States.
I know. I think regenerative medicine in this space is amazing. We've been seeing it, of course, in our space with, you know, musculoskeletal things, you know, the MSK space for many years, you know, with PRP and ACP injections, et cetera. And with such great results that were like, wow, you know, a shoulder and a knee and a hip and a labrum, just incredible. So, you know, when I was learning about all of your work, I was like, oh, this is interesting way that this is happening, because regenerative medicine is going to be the next big, you know, well, it is the next big frontier, what should I say? But I want to just move to, like, with the tensor fascia lata, because I want to have, you know, people to sort of understand that a little bit. You know, in the musculoskeletal space, we use tensor fascia lata sometimes for, you know, labral repairs and things of that nature in the hip. So when I saw that you were utilizing it for this, will you talk about that a little bit and some of the outcomes you're seeing, and maybe why somebody would choose, you know, maybe that over VNU or, you know, those sorts of things?
Sure. So I always kind of joke, because we talk about this space and how regenerative medicine and the technology that keeps coming out year after year, and what we're doing in the lab, and then how we're going to bring it to market. So, you know, my goal is, before, you know, my body falls apart, is that they have the next greatest thing for my shoulder, and then for my knee, and then face. So, you know, that's kind of like, you know, if I could just be one step ahead of that, then we're all going to be great. So I got to have a little bit of fun.
You've heard about the vampire facelift, right?
Right. Of course. So, yeah. So, kind of a little fun when we're, you know, since we're talking about vaginas today. So, the things that, you know, the tensor fascia lata, it's considered, you know, prior to mesh, you know, the traditional mesh sling, which is still the gold standard in the space, which can be, you know, which is safe and effective, but at the same time, it's not for everybody, and you do have complications. And so for us as a company, you know, we were able to continue on with the VNU line and say, okay, you know, what are people desiring? What do they need? And one of the things that was missing was to have a pre-cut fascia lata specifically for stress urinary incontinence. And so, you know, we customized the exact shape of what the surgeon would want. And what it's doing is it's doing the exact same thing that a traditional mesh sling will do, which is it's going to support that mid urethra. And so it's a different part of your body. It's part that is, it runs along the side of your leg. I think people are familiar with your IT band, because if you massage them, they usually hurt. Yeah. But, oh, and so that the tensor fascia lata, it's right next to it. And so that is what's harvested. So you can actually harvest that on the patient. So they do that. Or we can do our technology, which is, it's going to already be harvested for you. We're going to remove the DNA, and then we're going to allow the surgeon to then implant it. What do you get with that? You get more consistency in your outcomes. And because, you know, some of the two things that you're always concerned with. A, you're making another incision on the patient. Either they're going to take it from the leg or take it right above where you normally have a C-section, which is called rectus fascia. And so if you do that, that's the case, then you can get an infection that happens. So you're going to be able to avoid an infection. And then the other thing is that it's very hard to tension a autograft, which is from the patient, their own tissue, because it's already hydrated. We don't know how much it's going to shrink. So the number one side effect of when you have your own fasciolata being taken and harvested and implanted and used for a sling is that you get retention. And so we're taking that inconsistency out of the equation so that surgeons can get something that can be reproducible and give women the results that they're desiring. So right now we are about a year and a half into this project. We actually are studying the outcomes in two different sites, and we're tracking about 300 patients. So one of the things that you know, we can be innovative, and then at the same time, we want to back it up with science, and we want to back it up with publications. And so those are the things that we continue to work on and focus on, or those initiatives, is the fact that we want to, you know, give people like yourself in the space, being able to talk with these ladies and saying, hey, this is what we see as a success. You know, we're seeing this percentage of success in, you know, for this particular device. So we want to not only have the discussions with the surgeons that they're getting the results that they want, but then also we want to be able to go to the journals and be able to publish this to change behavior out there.
So Robert, just to clarify, just so I'm clear. So, you know, some people, then you're harvesting it immediately and then utilizing it, but because, you know, some of that, you know, that observable tissue or whatever shrinks a little bit, then you're kind of looking at a different way to get the harvest, or so explain that a little bit more. So it's still their tissue. Is that correct?
So what we provide to the surgeon is a donated tissue.
So that's going to
be donated, and then
perfect.
But what that does though is that removes that inconsistency from it, and puts it in a state that it's not going to shrink at a rate that would normally cause retention.
Okay, that's great, because that's a great clarification. I just wanted to make sure that people, you know, understood where it was coming from and the different ways that
absolutely
actually happens.
Absolutely. It's not coming from themselves, you know, because we're trying to avoid a second site and, you know, looking at harvesting from the leg, it's about 30 minutes in the operating room, costs more money. Now have a chance of getting that infected, and you have a higher chance of having retention. So you know, if you listen to what the challenges are and what the problems are, you can come up with better solutions. And that's how we think about what we do at Arms Medical, is we try to be really good listeners and try to be out front of everybody else, because you know, none of this happens in a lab.
No, right. I mean, and you're trying to solve everyday problems. And this is the beauty of what you're doing when you're integrating, you know, all of your work and collaborating. So it sounds like to me you love collaboration. So tell me a little bit about how that works for you in your life.
You know, so the thing about surgeons are is they operate in a vacuum. And so, you know, after they get done, you know, with their medical school, then they do residency and then fellowship, you know, now they're on their own. And so the thing that we try to do is try to keep that innovation going. And so, you know, there's a lot of creative people out there, and we want to tap into that. And so those are the weekly calls that I have with various people about problems that we are trying to solve. You know, it's, you know, we see something and then talk to, you know, various surgeons about it, start this collaboration process, and then start coming up with different ideas. And then, you know, start looking at, you know, what technology is out there currently, and then how do we align it to women's health? And that's always been the biggest, you know, area of opportunity is the fact that it never went into women's health. You know, the plastic surgeons got the technology, the orthopedics got the technology, and women's health got an empty rack. And so, you know, my goal is to change that for the women out there, because their importance to the space, and you think about how much they have sacrificed in their, and you know, raising their family, and you know, maybe they're giving up their career, maybe they have the career and the family. And so, you know, if we can give them a better quality of life, you know, age 40, age 50, age 60, I mean, you know, even at age 80, think about how that impacts not only the herself as a woman, but then all the people that is around them, that, you know, these improvements and advancements are so important to, you know, the world in general.
Robert, what's a day in your life look like? You know, because you are such an innovator and you have your, you know, relationships with so many different people to come up with solutions, you know, problem solving, listening, looking for solutions. What's a day in your life look like?
That's funny. Let's see. What is it? A day? Let's talk about a week. Because it's really,
okay.
It's more about the week because, you know.
I'll take the week. Okay.
I'll probably try to find myself in two cities a week. And, you know, sometimes one, usually two cities a week in multiple operating room settings. I do a lot of videotaping and do that for education and for advancing, you know, our space internally from what we're doing, and then physician training, physician sharing. And so, you know, I've got cameras that I'll bring into the operating room, and then I'll usually bring, you know, different projects with me, things that we're working on. So I have this, you know, bag of stuff of, you know, innovation in a bag. And so, you know, we have to think out, you know, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, we've got this, you know, really long calendar, that we look at of what project are we working on? What problem are we trying to solve? Where is it in the process? If you look over here, you're going to see this wall of blueprints that are up of different things that we're working on that are done on the CAD design, computer-aided design, you know, along with, you know, other projects that we have on our whiteboard. So it's never a dull moment. You know, try to be back in the office on a Friday to be able to do these. So you're getting a peek at our studio. You know, we fire that up on a Friday, but you know, a lot of times I can be leaving on a Sunday for in the operating room at 7 a.m. on a Monday, and then could be back, you know, on a Thursday night or on a Friday morning. Or if I'm out west, then I might just stay over for the weekend and
have a little fun.
Yeah, well, I'll go to, you know, if I'm in L.A., I'll go to the USC Design Center and work on projects there. So they have this, you know, really fabulous design center there with 3D printed computers, CNC machines, you know, they have the works. So might go on campus and, you know, bring the computer and do some things while I avoid a 5-6 hour flight back to the East Coast.
So Robert, tell everybody that, you know, what your background is. He's an engineer, and then tell us where you went to school and tell us a little bit of that.
So went to school, University of Minnesota, studied engineering for your ROTC scholarship. After that, I was in the military and was part of the infantry, the 227 infantry in Schofield Barracks. And so fortunate to go to airborne school, air assault school, ranger school, plus some other officer things that we had to do. And then when I finished that, I've got a job with Pfizer Pharmaceutical. And so that was really my first step into the healthcare arena at that point, to be able to witness, you know, innovation and it's such a very, very large scale. Most recently, I went back to school during COVID and now I'm finishing up my, what else are you going to do? And so that's where I'm finishing up at USC in innovation, design, and technology for Masters of Science right there at campus in LA. And so, you know, to always be, you know, never be stagnant, always be curious. Those are the things that, that I always think about is, you know, to always want to push ourselves to forge forward and never really accept the status quo. That's probably the biggest thing for me and what I try to project to my company is the fact that we want, you know, we want to push the boundaries. We want to, you know, don't accept something as that's how we do it. Just have to accept it. I know as a PT that, you know, those are things that you're up against.
Absolutely. I know sometimes it's funny, some of my clinical directors will be like, well, I thought once you got here, you kind of reached the pinnacle. And I was like, nope. I'm like, you keep growing, right? You keep driving, you keep looking for all these things, right? Because it changes healthcare for people and it makes a difference in communities and especially in the women's health space, which I'm so passionate about. But I just wanted you to share about, you know, what you were doing next with the innovation in that next could bring, because I think sometimes people don't even know there's something out here like that. So for some of the younger people who are listening and saying, wait, I want to do work like Robert does, or I want to be involved in that sort of stuff. They just kind of need to know, like, oh, how do I trek in that neighborhood?
Yeah. So great question. You know, I think it's, you know, someone who thinks like a designer, but also has the algorithms in their head of engineering, right? So you got to be, you know, process driven, problem solving driven. But then creative and ask a ton of questions, always be curious. You know, we talked a little bit before the show for all the things that you're doing with women's health and your dilators and such, and offering women a solution that, it, you know, can actually have intercourse, not be painful. And really that's about then accepting, not accepting the status quo, right? You're saying, hey, you can change this. You can advance this so that it can be enjoyable. So we've got these really rather unique dilators. These were actually designed by a surgeon that did his fellowship at Harvard and some years back. And so utilize these or the surgeons utilize these for women with shorter vaginas or ones that have painful intercourse. And so they're all stackable. It's a very unique design that you build it. You build the dilator based on the woman. And so that then if they need to gain some length, they can actually just, you know, rotate this and it can very slowly change the length of their vagina. And so you know, it's what's called neo-vagina that, you know, part of that procedure could be surgery. Yeah. And then part of it then could be utilizing a dilator set like this, and the other areas are, you know, women that go through cancer treatment. It can be very, very debilitated on their pelvis. So this can help them, you know, gain some dilation back and do so in a very, very slow manner so that it is not painful as the increment up in their length. Yeah. So it's a medical grade plastic. And so that allows it to be brought into the operating room. And so they'll use it in gender affirmation surgeries also. So this can be sterilized. It could be autoclaved. It could be dishwasher safe. If you can sterilize it, it's dishwasher safe. And so, you know, it'll have years and years of life to it. And it's what's called a seated dilator, which, you know, this little ring, you actually sit on it and then that's that upward pressure, which you slowly can graduate. And we've got, you know, various various lengths that you build, and then we have various diameters, depending if you want a little bit more girth to it.
And what's it called, Robert?
Just our vaginal dilator on our website.
We have one.
It's medical in nature. So we don't have anything like really, you know, super sexy name wise. But now
you better come up with one.
Al called me out on it. Now I'm like going, all right, I'm gonna go back to my marketing director and go, okay, we need a name because it says vaginal dilator set and it has code VDS9. You know, that's about as medical as you can get, right? We're up all night thinking of that name. Solving that problem.
There you just solve that problem. It's on his website, Arms Medical, just so you know if people want this. Okay, so let's talk.
Let's drop the link in, right? There you go. Go to the site. You can order.
And in between, he's going to come up with a new sexy name for it, okay?
That's right. By the next show, we're gonna launch the new name.
Okay, we bet. Okay, now I got laughing. So now I got to get back on task, right? So I just want to ask you really quick. In all of this space, like I know there's adversity every day. This is swinging into the business part of you. But when you're a founder of a company, I just want you to share, because a lot of our audience listens because they want to know they are founders or they're co-founders or they want to be a founder. And I want people to understand, you know, there's, of course, every day the good and the bad, but how do you handle the adversity that happens in your organization?
Yeah, I probably think of it from the military aspect of it is mission first, people always. So if you think about what's my mission, what am I trying to accomplish? Don't get pushed off track. You will have obstacles thrown at you on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. Stay the course, right? And then how do you bring your people along with it? And so you can probably see I'm pretty passionate about what I do, and I want my team to share in that passion. And we also, you know, you've got to have great people, and then you lean into people in some of those adversity situations. There's always people that maybe have gone through something similar, and you know, so you reach out to your support network. And so, you know, all those things are very important for someone that wants to start their own company or run their own company, is the fact that who's on your team. You're not going to do it alone. You've got to have great people that you share in both the wins and the losses, and you're always trying to figure out and network with other smart minds out there. And so that's why it's, you know, fun to have a conversation with yourself is like, hey, you are making this happen for you and for the women and for the space. And so, you know, hats off to you. And I love the fact that you could be a part of it.
Well, I'm glad that you're here today. I just want to ask you too, like this last year in your company, what is one of the most important things that you feel like you've accomplished and that you're the most proud of?
Last year. Well, so we've added a retired physician, a Dr. Rose, to our staff that is spearheading all this great data that we have and collecting it. And so, you know, to get to a point where we've got these great outcomes, we are continuing to innovate on a monthly, yearly basis, and then the ability to continue to add headcount of people that are very talented in their fields to now, you know, be able to publish, you know, these outcomes that we're having. So for us, that was a really nice addition to the team.
That's wonderful. What do you think is one big thing you want to accomplish this next year in your organization?
We have a few more projects that we are going to bring to market. And so that's, you know, that's things that are, you know, in the works. And we've got a couple of concepts that we are vetting out, you know, that we can't share, but they are going to be game changers. It's, you know, one of them is actually international in nature, and it's going to help solve the fistula crisis that affects over 2 million women. That's one of the things that we are in the process of addressing. And there's some other areas from IC to, you know, painful pelvic floor that we are looking at bringing solutions in, which is, you know, that's like your space. So you're really going, that's okay, we got to talk more. You know, but you know, that's just from you know, being out there and listening and you know, thinking about, you know, what's currently, how are these problems solved, and then how can we be more innovative and actually bring, you know, real long solutions to some of those conditions because they are so debilitating.
No, that's wonderful. I tell you, with the fistula issue all over the world, it's much needed. So any innovation in that neighborhood is going to be so beneficial. I have physicians who go, you know, to a lot of different countries to help in that arena. And it's a real thing, and it's a real problem for women. And you know, I, women, what, make 80 to 90% of the healthcare decisions for their family system. So when a woman feels
good. Is it that low? I thought it was higher.
It's probably 100% probably.
Thank you. If there's a woman involved, that it's coming from her. Okay? That's just, you know. You know,
well,
and you might get a question of, you know, like, you might think you have the opinion, like, you know, oh, honey, what do you think? But it's already been decided.
Robert, I'm going to go back just to this dilator because you talked about sitting on it. So I have to clarify to all my pelvic therapists, because so many people in the beginning do not sit on a dilator because it's too painful for many women. So I'm just going to clarify for the people that I work with, and so many of them, is that, you know, if your patient cannot tolerate sitting on the dilator, then we do a technique where we prop them up, their legs are up, their booty's up with a pillow underneath. And literally, you know, they may have that dilator there. You know, maybe they can't tolerate it for 5 to 15 minutes or et cetera. Maybe they can only tolerate it for 2 to 3 minutes in the beginning. And so you're looking for different places and spaces that they can actually tolerate having the dilator present in. So I just want to share with my pelvic PTs, because sometimes, you know, people will be like, hey, you know, I do want this dilator and I do need to be able to sit on it. I do need it in different positions. And we actually teach them to utilize it in different positions. So they may say, hey, I have painful intercourse in this position versus that position versus this position. And we're like, perfect. You're going to use your dilators progressively in those different positions, depending on what positions you're painful in, whether it's deep penetration, initial penetration, et cetera. But some of my people, and I know what you're saying, like you need that length is what you're after. So that sitting position is important. But I just wanted to clarify it for a whole lot of other pelvic PTs who might be newer in the space and they don't understand dilation. That's a component.
That's an excellent disclaimer. This can only be done with this style because usually either like the nurse practitioner, the PA or the physician, or, you know, someone in the gynecologist office, a urogyn or urologist that is in pelvic floor, they'll actually fit it for you. Okay. So that if you cannot make it, you know, this big or maybe this big, right, then yes, you do not want to sit on it because it can be extremely painful. And you guys have all those techniques of how to, you know, prop yourself up appropriately so that then they can actually gradually gain support. So yes, different style. So yes, yeah. You are.
No, I appreciate that. I just like people to understand the different reasons for things and the different ways things might be done and why you might want something that's, you know, in a different pattern, et cetera. So there we go.
Absolutely. There we go. We got that. We got the disclaimer put on there, and so that
now we just need the name, right?
Yeah.
So with these particular ones, is the physician actually fitting it at the office then for them? Is that kind of the way you utilize it? Or are people buying it off the shelf from you? I guess I should have clarified that before.
Normally they'll either get referred by a physician and then either myself or one of my staff will walk them through the concept. And of course the physician knows it because sometimes they might have a set at the office that they, can sterilize and they just like a demo set that they could show the woman what it's doing, how it's doing it. So that they already kind of know how that concept works so that then they could go ahead and purchase the dilator. But if sometimes we have the hospital that orders it, so then they'll actually fit it right there in the operating room because it could sit on the back table and be sterilized, and then they'll actually could go home with it. And so, there's another, we have another bottom portion that's very small, and then that is one where you won't sit on, right? So you actually just have compression underwear on that will keep it in its spot, or with some certain packing that they have post-surgery.
And absolutely. And I think in these gender affirming surgical procedures, you have to have this dilation. Do you know what I mean? It needs to be progressive and it needs to start right away. So I think that's a huge component of what I see. Do you know what I mean? With this product, with you in particular as well, because
yes,
that has to start and it has to stay a part of that lifestyle and that progression, because that tissue needs to have that expansion. And, we know that even after a hysterectomy with a woman, sometimes she loses the length, do you know what I mean, of the actual vaginal vault. And, I'll have people say, hey, I feel like my husband's banging up against, the cuff. And so sometimes those depth, and that it's literally because, hey, that's shortened somewhat. And a lot of women don't even understand that can happen. After you take the cervix and the uterus and you remove it, that they can have some shortening in the vaginal vault and they're going to need dilation and they're going to need that depth. So that's a really great product actually for that component as well. So I appreciate you sharing that.
Oh, absolutely. And when you go through that procedure, when you have hysterectomy, just a centimeter in reduction in that length could mean, it could be a big difference. And then also at the same time, the partner is feeling this, has that ability to have this movement and this expansion, right? Because they already have the cervix. And then when you remove it, that little cushion is gone, right? So now, that elasticity has been removed. And then sometimes they could have a little bit of scar tissue at the apex. And so you want to be able to, give them some of that length back that they desire, their partner desires also.
Absolutely. Robert, you mentioned before that you sometimes are on the other end and you have your own podcast. Will you tell people about that so they know where to find you?
Sure. So VNU Health and the V stands for vagina, because we're all about creating the new vagina for these ladies and really trying to give them this, freedom, this quality of life, this, not accepting the status quo. There's so much stigmatism to, the fact of not to talk about it, not to even call it a vagina, and Oprah did not help. All right, calling it the JJ. All right, and so it's a part of who they are, and it's a part of how they feel like a woman. No different than the man with himself. Right, so trying to bring some of these things forward and saying it's okay to talk about it. I always joke at the fact of. Is from you know, hard bodies is that the manufacturer or warranty ran out at 50. So every, you know, the thing that happens after 50 is like, hey, it's not under warranty. I'm so sorry, you know? And so, you know, 200 years ago, that was okay, you know, because not many people lived past 50. But hey, everyone, you know, like the quality of life and what we're doing and the things that in the travel and, you know, partners and, you know, it's absolutely, you know, fantastic. You know, with people that are at 80 sexually active, I love it. It's great. You know, hats off to them. And so if we can, you know, give them a quality of life for another 30 years, you know, how important is that? And I think it really is. And so, you know, more women need to be okay with saying, you know, I want to have this better quality of life. And it's really a lot of times it starts with you and your profession, right? Because, you know, that could be that first line of going, hey, how can I feel better about, you know, my pelvic floor? Teach me, you teach them about, you know, how to manage that space. And if that doesn't work, of course, there's the surgical side, but just having that interaction with the woman and yourself, your team, and the people that are in your specialty are so, so critical, because you guys are really the frontline workers, right? To actually having those relationships with these ladies. And so the more you can be open and honest with, you know, what we can provide as solutions, then they can actually make better decisions, which is our goal. And that's really the goal of the podcast, is the fact that we want them to have relevant information to make better informed decisions that is aligned to how to correct their particular condition.
I think the oldest woman I had was probably 90, and then I took care of her till she was probably about 96. And
amazing.
Well, yeah, and think of it, a woman can have an orgasm till the day she dies, so she's pretty lucky. So, I mean, I just want to, you know, say, like, so many people are having such a higher quality of life, and so they, maybe their partner dies, and now they're getting a new partner, and maybe their old partner had been sick and had passed away, and they're walking into our offices when they're in their late 70s, early 80s, meeting a new partner and saying, hey, you know, I haven't had sex for 10 years, or I haven't had, and I want to know what to do so that I feel good enough to be able to do this as long as I can, right? And I think that's the most amazing part of women's health. And that's kind of why I was looking at your work online and just seeing the things that you were doing, I was just so, my interest was so sparked, and I felt so excited that people actually are listening to women. And physicians are listening, and people are coming up with innovation, and they're being creative, and they're actually thinking outside the box and saying, hey, let's actually do things that actually make a difference for people, so that people can actually have the joy that they need to, like, into their older age, right? Because they want to have the fun, right? That we had all along.
Right?
Absolutely.
Now it's time to travel. You know, you can have grandkids and give them back, right? So, you know, those are the things that you think about is, you know, the world has changed. Women's health is behind. We're catching up, you know, more funding, more money, more, you know, and I also think that women underestimate the power that they have, you know, like they just do. And the fact of them, you know, wanting, you know, more innovation, wanting, you know, having funding for some of these initiatives are so critically important to not be, you know, set aside and not really think about how much impact it really has on their life.
Well, Robert, again, it's been so great to be with you, and I really appreciate it. And again, you can find Robert at Arms Medical, and then, of course, at his podcast as well. And Robert, I'm sure we're going to get tons of questions, and I'm sure I'm going to ask you to be back on the show and probably do some collaboration, maybe with some other people all together, because I really feel that your passion for women is really going to drive in this space and help us really have so many different ways to make women's life better. So thank you so much for your time. And I appreciate your passion in this neighborhood. It really helps us keep moving all this forward.
Great. Well, thanks for having me. And certainly look forward to our next chat.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks, Robert.
All right, Sheree.